The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Yeah, that of course is Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones. And Pat Carty, art journalist and broadcaster, is here to tell us the story of the Rolling Stones. Pat, you are the world's leading expert on the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. I've made money off them. There's no doubt about it. I've been writing about them for years. I am a massive fan, and I have been since I was about, I don't know, 14 or 15. I think an uncle turned me on to them. They are the greatest rock and roll band in the world. They are. Now, we were talking not too long ago on the radio, and you were telling me that Pet Sounds is your favourite record. Was that
yes.
you? That was you,
yeah,
wasn't
that was
it?
Me. Yeah. That was yeah. me.
Now, I respect that choice, but it's wrong. You know,
you're going to say Exile on Main
Street.
I am
going to say that, because that's not only the greatest record of all time. That's probably, I know, not probably, it is definitely humanity's greatest achievement, you know. We went to the moon, modern medicine, that's all great, but Exile on Main Street is out there in front of all of us.
Is it fair to say they're a band that has an incredibly long career based on a relatively short period of really good music?
That's a good point. That's a good point. You have, I suppose, a couple of ages of the Stones. Stones ages. The 60s, where they had a lot of hit singles, where they were seen as, and probably rightly so, second place to the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
as a kind of an alternative
Absolutely
to the Beatles.
Rightly
they were
so,
marketed
yeah.
by their early manager, Andrew Loog
Jesus,
Oldham.
This is like going back to Blur and Oasis between the two of you here.
It is, but it's more weighty than that. It's more important than Blur
yeah,
or Oasis.
Totally.
They were seen as a kind of anti-Beatles. You know, they were marketed that way. There was headlines in the paper, "Would you let your daughter marry a Rolling Stone?" And there was arrests, and you know, they went to prison. Mick and Keith did for a short period of time, admittedly, but you know, it was serious enough. The whole empire was seen as being threatened by these two spotty guys from Dartford. And then we get to 1968, and there is a change in the band. They made a record called "Their Satanic Majesty's Request," which was a very poor man's version of Sgt. Pepper. It's pretty terrible, and so they went back to the drawing board, had a rethink, got in a producer called Jimmy Miller, who's a very important person in this story. And in May 1968, I could tell you the date, but that would make me look really nerdy altogether, they released Jumpin' Jack Flash. And that's the start of Stones Mark II. So from 1968...
Go on, what date was it in May?
I think it was the 19th. You're checking your phone, eh?
I was checking to see if it was today.
I don't know, I'm guessing there. But 1968 to 1972, 73, they just made the best records that have ever been made, and that's all there is to it. And you can argue all you want, Shane, but
so
that's
what
the
was
truth.
What was the shift then?
The shift was, there was a shift in sound. They went back to a kind of a bluesier sound where they'd started off, but there was a shift in that Keith Richards had figured out a new way to play the guitar. This is getting very technical here, but he plays in open G. So when he hits the strings, it plays a G chord. So it's not the same as standard tuning. And that allows him to get a lot of drones going, a lot of hammer-ons for third and fifth chords in the scale. And it just gives him a different sound. So his riffs sound different from other guitar players. And then they also brought in a fella called Mick Taylor, who came in to replace Brian Jones. He was a virtuoso in lead guitar. You had them adding horn section to the band, keyboards, and they just were writing
the
best songs.
So he had tuned his guitar, so when you strum the open strings, it's the chord of G.
Yeah, that's what he uses.
Well, interesting.
And he also takes off the top string, so he only plays five strings. So he, that's when you see him playing now with his Telecaster, that's what he does most of the time. And it gives him that unique sound. But also just the songwriting had blossomed. Everything came together at the one time.
And they are obviously a band that has stood the test of time. They've been around since the dinosaurs. But Shane is right. When you think back to most of the Stones' greatest tunes,
oh yeah, definitely.
They're from very long ago. And I know we're talking about them largely because they're back, of course. The 25th studio album out, was it last week?
No, it's not out yet. It's out in July, but they released a single last week.
Right, sorry, my apologies because I obviously was listening to new music from them last week. But so that's new music. Sounds quite like some of their old music.
Yeah. Well, if it isn't broken, sure.
But how did the long... Is it because they were that first wave of pop and rock stars? Is that what's been there?
I think that's part of it. I think
their longevity, because like the body of music, it didn't continue in the 80s. I mean, I know they had Dancing in the Streets and whatever, you know, there was bits and pieces.
You're dead right. They made records. I mean, I would say the last really great one came out in 1981, the last really great album, which is a long time ago now.
Which one was that?
That'll be Tattoo You.
And there are songs that we would know on
Start Me Up is on it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So that'll be their last, I think that was their last number one single in America,
yeah.
I think. And, you know, there's been loads of albums since. There's been good songs and loads of them. But really, you're talking about the 60s and 70s is what their reputation is based on. The reason maybe they've continued to be so famous, a lot of that is down to Mick Jagger's business acumen. They became, I would argue, in 81, and this is around the time they played Slane, first time, they became almost like the greatest, they weren't the greatest rock and roll band in the world anymore, they were the greatest show band in the world. And they had these, the tours just got bigger and bigger and bigger. I saw them for the first time in London in 1990, I think that's right, yeah, Steel Wheels. And it was massive. And we thought, and they were in their 40s that time, they're in their mid-40s. And I thought at the time, oh my God, what am I doing looking at these old lads? You know, they're in the 40s.
And so they just kept going. So now for they have
singles out. I think Mick Jagger is 83 or something
I
like that.
I saw them. Was it 2018 they played Croke Park? Was it? I think it
yes,
was.
Yes. Yeah.
I saw them and I went along largely because I was given a ticket and I thought I'd never seen them. Let's go and see them. Mm. It'll be good to say you've seen them. But I had, this is maybe a bit unkind or a bit unfair, I had very low expectations.
Fair enough. They were
unbelievably good.
Yeah, they were good.
Mick Jagger came out and he does strut and he does swagger and all around me, women in the audience went, you still would, wouldn't you? Like it actually, and I surprised myself by going, yeah. Like, he has a presence.
Oh, he's a star.
In his, and this, whatever age he was, I think at that stage he was in his 70s.
Oh, he must have been,
late
yeah.
70s.
Yeah.
I was really surprised just how good they were.
Well,
I could see what they must have had at their height to some extent, because there was a charisma and a presence and a draw and a star quality that was 100%, unbelievable.
100%. And the other side of that is they have Keith Richards as well. So you have Keith Richards, who is the same age as Mick Jagger, and you have fellas in their 20s trying to dress like this guy who's in his 80s, you know. So he is this, and during the early 70s, he was probably the coolest looking human being who ever lived, and that's not up for argument either. And also Charlie Watts, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but the sound of the three of them, how it combined
key.
Together.
Listen, pause there for a second, because we're going to take a track from Exile on Main Street, Tumbling Dice. Let's have a listen.
That was Tumbling Dice there. Pat, we've talked a little bit about how amazing they erupted onto the scene in the 60s. They did have a very good body of work. They obviously had that kind of rock and roll lifestyle. They defined the rock and roll lifestyle to some extent. But they stuck around until now. And in terms of what they did in the 90s, the noughties, the tweenies, or whatever we call that decade, like, have they done anything worth much?
Well, you see, that depends on your point of view. I would be able to name, 20 or 30 songs from that period, whereas other people would say, no, they haven't done anything since then. And I couldn't even, even I couldn't argue that it's as good as what they did before. The strange thing that happens with if you're writing reviews about the Rolling Stones, what happens when a new album comes out? There'll be one in a month, as we said. There was one about 2 or 3 years ago, which came out of nowhere. That was their first studio album in about 18 years or something like that. And everybody, what all the critics say is, I'm not going to fall for this thing where I say, this is the greatest album they've made since 1970, whatever. And when I wrote a review of that record, I said that in the first paragraph, and then I fell for it. And I said, oh, this is great, you know. Have I listened to it much lately? No, I haven't, frankly.
Okay.
You know, so no, they're not making as good material. But to go and see them live, as you said, that was your experience of seeing them live. I saw them twice on that tour, that particular tour. I've seen them a lot of times, but I saw them twice on the tour. Croke Park was great, but I happened to be in Hamburg a couple of weeks before that. Well, not happened. I went to Hamburg to see it. And I'd had a few glasses of wine now. I'm not going to lie about it. But it was one of the greatest experiences I've had in my life, with my clothes still on, if you know what I mean. Fantastic night out.
Jagger, you mentioned Jagger and Richards. I mean, they are the heartbeat of the band. They didn't they meet on some platform and
they knew each other when they were small little boys.
Yeah,
and then I think Jagger moved away, and then they met on a train station platform,
Dartford railway station.
Yeah, where there's a blue plaque, which I actually this is how bad I am.
Should
I went and visited.
Yeah, fair enough. There should be. Their relationship has it always been smooth?
No, not at all. They had what they called the Third World War in the 1980s, where they weren't talking to each other at all, and they were just slagging each other off in the press. And then they were making solo records, some of them which are all right, some of them which are really terrible. And eventually, I think it was maybe Mick Jagger figured out that, more people are interested in coming to see me if I'm in the Rolling Stones than just Mick Jagger on his own. And I'd say to have, a cordial relationship now where they get on, you know, as business partners. They know that this is their thing. Obviously, you know, Mick Jagger doesn't need the money. Keith Richards doesn't need the money. They want to do this. I don't think they'll tour anymore. They were supposed to do a tour last year and Keith Richards said, I can't really commit to this, you know. I think he's just feeling it a bit at
well,
this stage.
And it's no surprise because well, they've lived about 10 lives.
Well,
haven't
they? he was on the top of the charts for next person expected to die in rock and roll for about 20 years. He used to joke about it in interviews. You know?
They say Captain Jack Sparrow from Pirates of the Caribbean is based on Keith.
Well, you know, he turns up.
There is a resemblance.
You know, he has a cameo in it as Captain Jack Sparrow's father.
That's right.
He turns up in
right,
the film.
That's right.
And there's no acting at all. Apparently, an extra had to hold his ankles because he was a bit a bit heavy with the rum. He was falling over.
Does suggest a certain sense of humour.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, exactly. Like, he plays it up in interviews. Apparently, he is a very well-spoken man, has a huge library in his house in Connecticut. But as soon as the microphone goes on, it's all, oh, yeah, rock and roll, all this, you know. Of course. Sure.
Are they two posh lads? Didn't the Beatles have that kind of thing? Oh, they're two posh lads. Well, we're working class. They're
Jagger
two.
Went to the London School of Economics. His father was a fitness instructor, but they were fairly middle class. Richards was a bit different, all right. But I mean, you know, they're certainly upper class now, all right.
Yeah, it does. I'm not suggesting it matters.
Speaking of their backstory, I mean, they had very flamboyant sort of love lives.
They did, yeah, they did. I mean, in that period that I pointed as their best, Mick was going out with Marianne Faithfull, and Keith was
great
going
artist
out with,
in her own right.
Yes,
of course.
Exactly. And Keith was going out with a woman called Anita Pallenberg, who was an actress herself, and they were kind of seen as almost members of the band. You know, like that's "Sympathy for the Devil" is a very famous song. It's based on a novel called "The Master." Oh, what's the name of that novel? Anyway, it's about the devil turning up in revolutionary Russia. And the novel was given to Mick Jagger by Marianne Faithfull. And Keith was borrowing Anita's clothes for the look he had that time. So they were very much part of the band. Now, Mick wouldn't be a great man for settling down. He's got a bit of a reputation.
Jerry Hall will tell you that.
Settles down a lot. And
settles down every evening, probably. I think he got engaged recently. And the woman he got engaged to is a ballet dancer, I think. I can't remember her name either. But she's
in her 80s, I presume.
No, she'd be a bit younger than that. I'd say I think she's in her 40s.
He is a good Arsenal fan, I should say. So I'll give him credit for that.
Well,
We should play out one of the new songs. Yeah. Is there one in particular that's worth playing?
I think in the Stars, which is the single. I mean, there is another one called Rough and Twisted, I think it's called, but he swears a bit in that, so you shouldn't play that one. But I mean, listen to this. The riff could come from 1972. This is by a gang of fellas in their 80s. And, you know, right, it's not as good as Jumpin' Jack Flash. Yeah, it's not as good as Gimme Shelter. It rocks a bit, though.
Yeah.
You know, and if they turned up in Crow Park again, I'd be there.
Yeah, okay. For sure. Look, thank you for that, Pat. We will leave you with that new track, of course, from The Stones, In the Stars.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.